Good morning, everybody. Okay. We're learning today. Good morning.
Good
morning. Morning over there. Hello. Hi. We're learning today the Gvuras Hashem Hagdama Shniya, the second introduction of the Maral to the Gvuras Hashem. And this is, I would say, the Maral would consider it a very important essay, not just another piece. It speaks about matters which he discusses not just here, and one which he enters really a significant argument, a polemic which he has against others and their perceptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God, of miracles, of the miracles that were employed here in Yetzias Mitzrayim, and of miracles generally. The truth is that the subject matter discussed here involves many philosophical concepts, and not simple ones, not simple philosophical concepts. The bases who the Maral is coming to argue with are based on, again, various kinds of based on philosophical perceptions and profound philosophical ideas that not my personal expertise, especially the ancient philosophy perspectives that are being drawn upon here, but we will do our best to try to explain the position of the Maral, which in many ways is much easier for us, I think, to understand than those who argued with the Maral, who were coming from a much more, again, classic philosophical bent. And the core of the issue that the Maral is discussing here is miracles. The nature of Nisim, the nature of miracles that are performed, that happen in the world. This is Sefer Gvuras Hashem. Gvuras Hashem is primarily to discuss Yetzias Mitzrayim. And there are many aspects to Yetzias Mitzrayim, but not the least, by far, of the aspects of Yetzias Mitzrayim was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's demonstration of this tremendous power within creation. As we spoke about last week, this is the Kvod Malachim Chakor Dover. These are the miracles which are on display for us to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand within the Bria, within creation. So, of course, an understanding of miracles and the presence of miracles, the limitations, if there is such a thing, on miracles, becomes a core issue. Now, the Maral here in his introduction to the Gvuras Hashem, his basic dispute, the way he frames his dispute, was with Ralbag. Ralbag was known in the secular scholarly parlance as Gersonides, Rabbeinu Levi ben Gershom. So he was of the, I can't tell you exactly which century he lived in, but past the classic Rishonim, who are usually embroiled in the dispute. I think he's somewhere around 14th century, but I'm not sure. Don't hold me to that. And Ralbag is most known to the casual learner for his commentary on Nevi'im Uksuvim, Nevi'im especially, which is published in the classic editions of the Mikrois Gedolos, the classic editions of the Nevi'im with commentary. His commentary on Chumash didn't make it to the classic Mikrois Gedolos, and is not as well known, and is only more. Rav Mosad Rav Kook has published the full commentary now of the Ralbag on the five books of the Chumash. But the Ralbag, above and beyond his commentaries on the Chumash, also wrote books of philosophy. Most notably, he wrote a sefer called Milchamos Hashem, which is in the Wars of Hashem, which is the name of a sefer, by the way, that many other Rishonim wrote for him, called Milchamos Hashem. It gives you a sense that they had something that they've an issue that they wanted to dispute, to argue about, but he wrote a sefer called Milchamos Hashem, and the primary argument which Maral is making here in Hakdama Shniya is against the Ralbag's positions as articulated in Milchamos Hashem. Not only against him, but he's the target. He's the target, the primary target. In truth, though, the Maral also argues in a similar way with the Rambam. I'm not really sure if the reason why he doesn't really name the Rambam as his target here in the Guras Hashem is because he'd rather not be arguing with the Rambam, he'd rather argue with the Ralbag, who's, you know, much doesn't occupy as dominant, as significant a place in the hierarchy of Jewish learning as the Rambam, so he'd rather, you know, discuss the Ralbag. I don't know, maybe that's why, or maybe he's taking special issue with those things, but what's clear is that another of the major essays of the Maral on this subject, which is found in his commentary on Pirkei Avos, which was written after the Gvuras Hashem, there he alludes to, in fact he quotes himself, which is unusual. He says, this is what I wrote in the second introduction to the Gvuras Hashem, and he goes on to quote it. And I think what he does, that, you know, the Maral overlaps all the time, right? In his Svarim, he's constantly addressing things in this book which he addressed in another book. But he always seems to just write it over again. There was no cut and paste feature on his quill, you know? So he just, you know, he writes it again as if he had never written it, and he doesn't sit and say, let me copy down to you what I wrote in this other place. However, because the Hagdama Shniyah of the Maral to the Gvuras Hashem, because this introduction actually raised specific objections amongst other contemporary scholars, most notably the Maaseh Hashem, which is a sefer which is written on Maaseh Bereishis and Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is an available sefer, and he took strong issue with the Maral's approach as opposed to, you know, in his argument with the Ralbag. So because it seems they were attacking him for something specific that he wrote, so when he came to further address it, he quoted what he wrote, and he explained what he wrote, and defended what he wrote a little bit more specifically than his usual overlap. But there in Pirkei Avos, excuse me for this lengthy introduction, okay, but we'll get down to business shortly. There in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, in his commentary to Pirkei Avos, that's the Perek Hei, Mishnah Vav, the sixth Mishnah in the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos, where it discusses the ten things that Hashem created on Friday afternoon just as it was getting dark, and they're miraculous items. So there he's really primarily addressing the Rambam. Then he gets into all these others who took issue with his Hakdama Shni, and he gets to the others. But he primarily is addressing the Rambam for the simple reason that one of the classic commentators on Pirkei Avos is the Rambam. Right there on the spot, the Rambam, in his commentary to the Mishnah, says what he says, which the Maral objected to. And so that's really the point of departure, to a certain degree, for his commentary, because that's the way he works in his commentary. He'll quote the classics and then raise issues with them. So there, addressing the Rambam was sort of inevitable. I mean, structurally, it would be the natural thing. Instead of him going to a book of philosophy that most of the people studying Pirkei Avos may not have seen, he goes to the Rambam, which he assumes is the text in front of them as they're going to continue in learning his commentary. So with that lengthy introduction, the Maral, again, is taking issue both with the Rambam, in a general sense, with Ralbag specifically, with the Maaseh Hashem, with, in short, commentators who were grounding a lot of their thinking in philosophy. And because of their grounding in philosophy and their understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in certain philosophical terms, they had a hard time getting their arms around miracles. You have to understand that the Rambam, for example, who was a strong student of Aristotelian philosophy, and excuse me if I sound sophisticated, don't be fooled, okay? I don't know what I'm talking about, really. I don't know philosophy. I know like little bits, you know, which you have from what you learn in the Svarim of the Rishonim, but I wish I knew more, so I could understand it better and understand the contrast. But the Rambam certainly was a student of Aristotelian philosophy. In fact, it was something which upset many of his contemporaries, which is why the Rambam's first book in the Mishnah Torah, the Sefer Hamada, specifically Yesodei HaTorah, which draws on a lot of these philosophical concepts, was burned, not by Germans, you know, not by Muslims, but it was burned by Jews. Was forbidden to be read by some other Rishonim. The Rashba had big issues with the Rambam on these issues, because it was grounded in to some degree in philosophical terms. But the Rambam himself had to deviate sharply from Aristotelian philosophy, even though he used a lot of its concepts. And one of the big deals was because in a philosophical conception of Hashem being the sort of perfect being, where does it come about that at one sunny day HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides that, you know, I need a world? First of all, why do you need a world? Why does the perfect God need anything? And second of all, how does the perfect God, who is constant and eternal, ever decide at a certain point in time to do something? Nothing should change in Hashem. So, you know, those kinds of these kinds of philosophical conundrums, which sort of like paralyzed the philosophers from being able to understand God the way we do, so they would come up with more detached images of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not the kind of God who speaks to Moshe one day and hears, you know, Yankel's tefillah the next, right? They couldn't deal with that. So the Rambam had to use philosophical terms, but at the same time not accept a lot of the consequences of what they understood, and in fact put in there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Baal Ratzon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did want things at certain points in time, did connect to people, did speak to them, did hear from them, did do things as you know, there's a moment of creation. It's not just like an automatic thing which is spawned by nature of a great God, which was what the philosophers would have to say, but instead a willed, chosen action of creation that happened at that point in time. That's like a core struggle which you have between philosophy and the world the way we see it. That struggle occurred on a level down, which is Nisim, which is miracles. Because miracles are certainly requiring a moment of divine intervention. Miracles are undoing the sort of constancy that would exist in the world, and even the constancy that would exist with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with the world. Now, I'm saying all this to you, and what are your reactions? What are reactions? One possibility is always, of course, the glazed eye reaction, right? The other possibility is that, you know, this is all very interesting, but, you know, come on, give me a break. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's there, and he's alive, right? He's Elikim Chaim, and he's listening, and he's watching, and there's Chayva Einesh, there's reward and punishment, and there's divine intervention, and there's Hashkacha Pratis. We see HaKadosh Baruch Hu reacting real time to things which are going on in the world. And we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Kol Yachol, he's absolutely capable, nothing at all stands in his way, so he can do whatever he wants. Now, usually, he does whatever he wants with a mask on. You know, it happens through hidden things. We don't have, you know, seas split when we want to cross. We have to get in a boat. And maybe divine providence has it that just when we get there, the boat arrives and is able and ready to take us across to the other time. That's with a mask on. At Yetzias Mitzrayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did what he's always eminently capable of doing. He ripped the mask off and he split the sea. He ripped the mask off and he turned the water into blood. Right? So, you know, if you ask me, I'm like perfectly satisfied. Let's go on to the Gvuras Hashem. You know, like what do we need more of this introduction for? But this was rather not a simple thing to be accepted by others. What I'm telling you here, really, in a certain sense, again, I'm like really, really oversimplifying, is Maharal says, come on, give me a break. That's our belief in the Rabbanu Shel Olam. But there were those who struggled with this. And again, a lot of the struggle comes from philosophical terms, philosophical ways of thinking about the constancy of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And some of the problems come from Mamore Chazal, from statements which Chazal said, which gave an impression of some kind of limitation which could exist in these areas. So, for example, Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a condition when he created the world, and the condition was, he made a condition with the sea, and he said, I'm going to need you to split before the Jewish people when they go out of Mitzrayim. Now why does it say that? Why does the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos say that there are 10 things that Hashem created on Friday afternoon Bein HaShemashos at twilight, right? Because Baruch Hu was running around, Shabbos was coming, he was getting late, he had just gotten back from work, right? And he had a few last things that he had to create on Friday afternoon Bein HaShemashos. Now the truth is, right, I'm making late sonos, I'm making a joke, we'll see Mirz Hashem as we go along, that of course you have to understand what the Mishnah means by that language. Bein HaShemashos, by the way, is not by that time we're finished doing work, it's twilight, right? We have to say, well, maybe it's Shabbos already. Hashem can work during the twilight zone because he knows exactly the moment in time when Friday ends and Shabbos begins, right? So Hashem is really able to work till the last second, and we're not. You want to try to do it by phone?
Yeah.
We're not able to do it to the last. We're not able to do it to the last second. We're not able to work to the last second. So Hello?
I'm here. I can hear you.
Okay, fine. Where were we? So the thing is, why does the Mishnah say that Hashem created all these things on Friday afternoon at the last minute, when it was even a last minute that only Hashem was able to create, it was even past our deadline because we can't work during Bein HaShemashos? Why, and what are those 10 things that Hashem created during that time? Oh, he created the mouth of the donkey of Bilam that spoke. He created the mouth of the earth that swallowed up Korach. He created the staff of Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, all these things which are miraculous things that would occur in the world. So what do we say? We say that Hashem created them on Friday afternoon in Bria, you know, of Sheshes and Mebereshes. Why? Why do you say that? Why does Shlomo HaMelech say, this is not Chazal, this is Shlomo HaMelech. Why does Shlomo HaMelech say in Koheles that Ein Kol Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh, there's nothing new under the sun? Which means nothing can change. You're sort of locked in to the reality of whatever creation is. And does that mean that to some degree Hashem's hands are tied when it comes to miracles? And really, all of these makairis, all of these sources, combined with the philosophical issues which could exist when it comes to the performance of miracles, led to a thinking that, of course, there were things which happened which were miracles during Yetzias Mitzrayim, for instance, and at other times in history. But those things had, to some degree, to already be built into creation. When it says that at the last moments of creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created those things, he had to create them, he had to program them in, because, after all, afterwards, once Hashem created the world, he's not going to intervene. He's not going to change the game at that point in time, because Hashem has this sort of constancy. And, you know, programming it in means that it's expected. You know, yes, normally these things happen, but, you know, the clock runs. We have this clock which has some kind of a computer chip inside of it, right? And it runs and it goes and it tells time 24 hours a day. And then one day you come and it's an hour earlier. You say, uh-oh, what's going on? What's wrong with the clock? Well, nothing's wrong with the clock. It's set that on this date, it resets for an hour earlier, right? And we notice it especially because this clock was manufactured before the United States government decided to change the date that we changed the clock. So they come in one day in October, and the clock has changed. And you say, "Whoa! Like, what's going on over here?" So you notice it. Well, it's not that the clock did something wrong. It was programmed mitzchilas yitzirasai from when it was formed that it's supposed to, it's programmed for these deviations. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, and the water is supposed to flow, except Hashem created also a blip there that on the 21st of Nisan, in the year 2448, it would actually stop. So don't view that as, you know, some kind of a change in the world. It was built in that this change was supposed to happen, and therefore it's not really a change. Therefore it's part of the original program. Now, you happy with that? Again, what that does is, what it seems to, the impression that leaves, is of somehow removing HaKadosh Baruch Hu from a live, dynamic connection to the world. And the Maral objected fiercely to any kind of a perception like that. Now, the Rambam did not believe that the Rambam was removed from the world. Right? The Rambam, you know, he knew what Aristotle had to say, and he knew exactly how to argue with it. And the Rambam counts amongst his Ikarei HaEmunah in order to defy Aristotle, in order to show where he differentiates himself from it, is that there's a point when Hashem created the world that Hashem responds with...
Houston, we have a problem.
Hashem responds even when it comes to... Well, maybe we're back on over there. Hashem responds...
Yeah.
Okay. Hashem, did you hang up on purpose?
That was a mistake, but I can see you on both now.
Okay, so let's keep both. You could turn down the volume on one if it's driving you crazy, but let's keep them both on. So where are we? So could someone help me, please? Where am I? Right. So he does it. He says there's reward and punishment, and Hashem listens. You know, you have to pray to HaKadosh Baruch when Hashem speaks to people. Right? All of these things that the dry philosophers would not believe. But when it comes to this thing and his interpretation of the Mishnah and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu functions within nature, he understands it to some degree to be curtailed. So this is sort of the gist. This is sort of the gist of what's spoken about over here. And what I would like to do here, I'm not going to read through with you, the Hagdama Shniyah is long. I'm not going to read through with you the Hagdama Shniyah or claim to go through every step of it, partially because of its length, partially because I think, again, the core assumption, which I just told you, which the Maral is trying to arrive at, is sort of our given. It's our given. And I don't know too many people who are caught up in the Rambam Ralbag sort of picture of the world that are going to be struggling with this matter. But it's important to know that this is a machlokas and a big issue. It was a big issue in certain times. But again, the distilled conclusion of the Maral is the way we would sort of view things. But
why is there a stira? I mean, because you can, even if the Kaddish Goruch Hu pre-programmed it, and you still have Ashkocha about this because it's within the parameters, and time is something that is defined by our thing. He's beyond time, so therefore it's in it's a real time to him, so it's not a stira.
Okay. Though that kind of an argument is the kind of argument which is made, you know, which the Maral himself will make, which some would say, you know, there to some degree in the Rambam, although the Rambam doesn't speak about the issues of Zaman. But it's good, you know, and we're going to have to somehow make shalom. We're going to have to somehow make peace between at least some of these. The Ralbag is almost impossible to make shalom with, because the Ralbag has certain premises, which, again, I'll tell you a little bit about what they are. The core issue I want to sort of like just remind, what I'm telling you here is the conclusion of the Maral, without the beautiful frills and bells and whistles which he adds and which he uses to explain, which I'll try to give you a little bit of that. That's like the main thing I want to come out from this Hagdama Shniyah. Okay, and this is a different kind of a shir than we usually learn the Maral because of the complexity of the matter. What I would like to do though is try to touch on a couple of the issues, a couple of the so-called philosophical issues that they raised and the Maral's responses to them. That's one thing that I would like to do. And the second thing that I would like to do is, and conclude with, is some of the beautiful bells and whistles of the way the Maral understands these things that Chazal speak about. His picture of the world, when we have this notion of Hashem making a condition with Bereishis, of there's nothing new under the sun, of At the end of Friday afternoon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to create these 10 things. So let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk a little bit about these things. There's a concept which is out there, which the Rambam writes about a little bit in Yesodei HaTorah, in the beginning of Yesodei HaTorah, in the beginning of his code, where he writes about these philosophical things, which is about the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they see as being one and the same with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem and his Yediyah, Hashem and his knowledge, is one. That's a philosophical notion. Remember that philosophers are people of knowledge. Right? Their connection to whatever is going to be built on knowledge. And their description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being as a Yodea, as one of knowledge. So what's the rub? The rub is that if things develop and there's new knowledge, then that means if Hashem is knowledge and things develop and there's new knowledge, then what ends up happening? Hashem ends up changing, because knowledge changed. Okay? Remember, if you don't get this, don't worry about it. Okay? You know, when Rabbi Yehuda Halevi was dealing with the philosopher, he basically said to him, "You guys are just Dreykups. You're just like mixing me up with all this abstraction." You know, he wanted to get down, so to speak, to business. There's a notion of Yediyah, of knowledge being one, and therefore the certain unchangeability of knowledge. And to this, and therefore the problems of charting new developments and changing things which would happen in the world. The Maharal's response to this is that we don't call him HaKadosh Baruch Hu for nothing. Which means that the fundamental name of Hashem that we use, he says, I mean, I shouldn't say the fundamental name, there's so many ways which we refer to Hashem, but a constant terminology which we use when we speak about him in our parlance is HaKadosh. Right? Baruch Hu, of course, is just blessed be he. Right? HaKadosh, the Holy One. What does that mean, the Holy One? Kadosh in Lashon HaKodesh means holy / separate, beyond, nivdal, removed. And what he says, basically, the Maral's approach is that you can't really describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu as knowledge. You can't. You can't describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu as anything. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence is beyond description, which is, in other words, Kadosh, transcending of any of these things. In a certain sense, Yediyah, Hashem's knowledge, is, writes the Maral, and this got again several of his contemporaries upset, but it's just a pu'ula, it's just an action of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's just a function of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, the fact that knowledge changes and reacts and things go differently along different steps along the way is not a contradiction. No less than you have the general notions of Yediyah and Bechira, right? And that conundrum, which the Rambam himself raised, which is Hashem's knowledge, and yet people have free will along the way. Hashem is supposed to like know everything. He has to know everything in advance. It can't change, but yet people have free choice along the way. So there's some way to resolve that. Hashem is beyond time. Whatever methods you want to use to resolve that. But you understand that we don't limit HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a book of knowledge that's written, and therefore you can't erase a page and rewrite it. It just doesn't, that's not a conception of Hashem. It's not a conception of Hashem. So to limit him, so to speak, by such perceptions is just not possible.
How does he reconcile the Yichud part? Because it's all one. And also, you're defining knowledge based on man. Man is imperfect. Our knowledge changes, and we're, God is in a different realm. The fact that we discover the science changes doesn't mean the science changed. It means our understanding of the science changed. Science has always been the same. We're limited.
Okay.
So... I mean, basically the way that Plato diverged from Aristotle and his Plato's Republic with the cave, where you have a fire in a cave, and our perception of the fire is the shadow on the wall. We don't see the fire, we see the shadow on the wall.
Okay.
But our perception of... So there's no perfect imagery a projection of Hashem into this world. It's the projection of Hashem. It's a projection. So every time, if we see a new aspect of it, of the panim, it's just another projection of Hashem.
But that's our limitation.
Right. Those are our limitations.
You have those limitations, and yes, again, that's all part of the discussion. But they came to conclusions on how this whole unfolding of the world has to work based on an understanding of Hashem's Yediyah, and therefore the limitations which are imposed by the identification of Hashem with Yediyah, with knowledge, and therefore it produces this consequence. And yes, that's part of the Maharal's objection. You're trying to put it in this box of what we call Yediyah. It's not it. It's not limited by that. And again, I think that's our instinctive thing, which we have sort of, you know, grown up with this perception of. You can't speak of, you know, a philosophy which is trying to question the limitations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu about the rock that he can't lift and so on and so forth is inherently flawed. The Ralbag was exceptionally problematic to the Maharal, and which is, I think, again, part of why he raises his argument against him here in the Hakdama, because the Ralbag came from this. We don't find this at all in the Rambam. The Rambam's limitation of Nisim is just that he says that somehow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, did the miracles in advance. The Ralbag describes more miracles as happening through a different capacity, which is achieved potentially by a person, something which is called by the philosophers the Seichel HaPoel, otherwise, right, we call the active intellect, something which is some kind of a metaphysical concept that they used where the person is able to connect to something way beyond himself and therefore would be able to some degree control things and act upon things within the world. And that's his understanding of it and of that control. And therefore, for example, the Ralbag said that you can never perform a miracle that will affect the Shemaim, will affect the heavens, because the Seichel HaPo, the active intellect, draws its strength from the heavens, and therefore it cannot turn around and overpower that which gives it strength. So the Ralbag says that when Yehoshua was fighting a battle and it was getting late and he said, let the sun be silent in Givon and the moon over the valley of Ayalon, and the sun stopped and it didn't set for like a whole day, and we read that as a miracle. And the Gemara has a discussion, well, exactly, was it 12 hours that it stopped? Was it 24 hours that it stopped? Was it 36 hours that it stopped? Was it 48 hours? All kinds of different pshatim. The Gemara has a machlokas about exactly how long it stopped. The Ralbag says, what happened was, he won the battle so quickly, right, that it was as if the clock stopped. You know, like 3 touchdowns in the last 2 minutes. You know, so it's like, you know, what happens? Like a whole thing happened. So it's like it's as if the clock stopped. It just so much happened in that short amount of time. That's the way the Ralbag says it, and the Maharal, shoo, like, get out of my way. You know, and it's, and remember, the Maharal, when it comes to Divrei Chazal, is the non-literalist, right? He'll say things which the Gemara says this. It doesn't mean that the frog was this big, right? It just means symbolic of something or another. But that's not. You're saying that didn't happen because that couldn't happen, and it's a story in Tanakh which we have accepted for the generations as a literal story that this is what happened. What are you talking about? So he, you know, again, these are philosophers. He sees it as philosophers who see HaKadosh Baruch Hu as removed from the world and not able to really affect change within the world. No way. So these were big issues and big arguments, big arguments. Again, we don't feel threatened by these arguments, I think, so much because since we're not sitting around musing with Aristotle on some kind of a mountaintop in a, you know, in a, one of those togas or whatever, you know, whatever it is, so we're not like big deal, you know. But in a certain framework, a certain context where that was the arena of knowledge, and that was a right. So this was a big issue, a big polemic. So, you know, arguments about this went back and forth. Yeah.
So the idea, just check quickly, but the Rambam and the Rabbah, they're saying that basically Hashem's not going to go and do miracles, in generally speaking. So we do have this idea of, let's say, you know, the Sefer Yetzirah or Kabbalistically being able to do things. So they're not really arguing with people. I mean, what Rabbi was just saying, they're not really arguing that about people having somehow the ability
Correct.
To go and beyond. They're just saying it can't be so easily initiated the other way around.
Right. Tools which exist in the world. Of course you're able to use those tools and you're able to go manipulate. In fact, that's part of the beauty, so to speak, of using the Seichel HaPoel, because the Rabbah will also speak about miracles being accomplished through people, through Nevi'im, right, who were always present there. Rabbah has lots to say about these subjects, right, but yes, that's really part of what you're just saying, sort of like as a question answer, is really part of what he uses in order to resolve this problem of what's Hashem doing intervening. It's not really Hashem intervening. It's people using a special power which exists within the world, within the limitations of those powers, that make those things happen. So, you know, these are the kinds of things. And what I would like to do, if it's okay with you, I would like to sort of like cut to the Maharal's picture. To the Maharal's picture of Nisim, of miracles, of Teva, of nature, of how those two work together, exist together, of the idea that Hashem made a condition with Ma'ase Bereishis, that the sea would have to split, of the idea that Hashem created these things on Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos. And Maral's idea is very, very simple, beautiful, typical idea, which he says, which is like this, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world of nature, and the world of nature has its own Seder, has its own order of the way it works. They are the laws of nature, the way they continue and they work. Hashem would not smash the laws of nature. He created a world, and he means for that world to continue. And he doesn't just go and deviate from the Seder, from the order of the world. I'm not just speaking about the fact that Chazal teach us that, you know, it's better for Hashem not to have to do miracles because he doesn't want to deviate from the order of the world. You know, there's that famous Gemara about the person who, heaven forbid, Rachman al-San, his wife died, leaving him with an infant child. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a miracle that the father was able to, this is what the way the Gemara says it, that the father was able to nurse his child. And one said, wow, look at this. This person merited that HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed the order of nature so that he would be able to feed his child. And then the other responded and said, oy, that's terrible that Hashem had to change from the order of nature for this person to be able to feed his child. So it's not necessarily a good thing. It's not necessarily good that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so there's a certain advantage and a certain desire that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want change from Ma'ase Bereishis. That's something for itself. That's significant, and it's something for itself. Hashem does miraculous when he has to, so to speak. And we know this rule that even when he wants to do a miracle, but he'll always try to somehow do it with something of a cover up, do it with something less. You know, the lechem hapanim, the showbreads in the Beis Hamikdash stayed fresh from Friday when it was baked until the next Shabbos when it was removed. It was still hot and fresh from the oven, but yet structurally, now there's no way that happens under the course of nature. Something miraculous is going on there, but nevertheless, when they structured the shulchan, they put in various tubes and pipes so that the bread would get a lot of air, which is less likely to make it become spoiled and moldy. If Hashem is miraculously preserving the bread anyway, what do you need that for? So as is explained, yes, Hashem is going to do a miracle, but Hashem wants as much as possible to have it within the function of nature. So yes, we can speak about that idea that Hashem doesn't want to deviate from nature. But what we're talking about here is something more basic than that. which is that Hashem's not going to smash the order of Bereshis. And what he did, therefore, was he built into the world the supernatural. In other words, there's a natural world, but the natural world is not a freestanding world. In everything which Hashem did in the world, he went and he said, you have this natural world, this earthy world, but I'm putting into it a hook, a link, a connection, an aspect which is out of the course of nature. Let me try to explain this to you a little bit. Hashem started creating the world on the first day of creation. He created everything in the material world. He created everything, the earth and the dry land and the seas and the plants and the animals and the fish and the birds and everything else. And really, on the sixth day he went and he created all the animals, and he says, and he saw that it was good. And usually when you say that he saw that it was good, Hashem is ready to call it a day. But then what did he do? He said, I want to make man in our image and our form. And the way we understand, the way Chazal understood what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was doing there was, is that he had this whole material world, which is all a material creation, which is all natural and disconnected, you know, separate. It's a physical nature with physical teva. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create an ambassador of heaven on earth. He wanted to create something that would bring the divine sphere into the material world. The material world is there, the animals are there, everything is there. Man, who's created biologically like the animals and on the same day as the animals, but Hashem puts into him a divine peace. On Shabbos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu stops altogether with creation in the material and the physical world. But then the world doesn't just resume in its physical path. Shabbos is the buffer. Shabbos is Vayikadesh Oso. It's the day when HaKadosh Baruch Hu infuses his presence into the material world. So I explained to you once, that's why Rashi implies that man really was supposed to be created on Shabbos. It's just that you don't do work on Shabbos, so therefore Hashem did what he needed for Shabbos, he did on the sixth day. Right? That's what Rashi brings, that's what Chazal say. Because man, like Shabbos, is this idea of Hashem putting into the material, physical world a divine element. Now when we speak about that, we think about, okay, so we have physical lives, but we put into it something called spirituality, right? A human being has a sensitivity to things beyond the physical world. A human being has a sixth sense, right? Something beyond the simple physical world that he sees and lives within. That's the yitura, that's the advantage. But there's another step to that. That's nice and fundamental in terms of our sensitivities. And it's those sensitivities which we cultivate especially on Shabbos Kodesh. But it even expresses itself in terms of, if there's a divine peace in this world, then that should show itself in the conduct of the world. And that's the miracle. The miracle is when you see that this world of nature is not freestanding and independent and just its own system. It's a system, but it's not an independent system. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not create the world and make it hefker. He's not, you know, the Ford Motor Company creating a car, rolling off the assembly line, putting it on a boat, and it'll end up wherever. Right? And it'll be its own thing. No. It's a drone. You know, it's a UAV. You know, the Ribbono Shel Olam is still involved. He's still there. So yes, it has its own systems. Yes, the world has its own systems. But part of what Hashem did once when he created the world, the condition that he made with Ma'aseh Bereishis is, part of your order of nature is to accept a divine nature. To accept the possibilities of intervention. And says the Maharal beautifully, I think, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu created it on Erev Shabbos Bein HaShemashos. Right, these 10 illustrations of this introduction of the miraculous into nature are not created in the 6 days of creation. They're Shabbos-dika creations. But on the other hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't create things on Shabbos. So it's actually created in the time that we would consider it created on Shabbos, because we got to stop working as soon as the sun goes down. Ben Hashmoshes, we don't work anymore. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still able to do it. So this is not the picture of the harried housewife running around and trying to set the oven at the last minute before Shabbos. No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu coolly, calmly, and collectedly, he says, as the world stops its physical activity, and it says, okay, now's the time for the sanctity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be seen in the world, I, who am still able to be active, will introduce into the physical world those things which reflect my presence, my active presence, rather than the wheel of nature of Olam Kimenhago Noig, of the world continuing to go. Those are the things that Hashem created at that specific window, at that specific moment in time. We celebrate that there's such a thing as an order of creation. The examples I gave you before are one illustration of that. Hashem wants to work within the order of creation. But we also celebrate the miraculous as part of the system. The Maral explains this way, a beautiful thing which Chazal say, the Gemara says in Brachos, that a person who says Hallel every day, he's mecharef umegadef. It's like he is blaspheming HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're not supposed to say Hallel every day. Ah, says the Gemara, but one second, it says you're supposed to say certain Hallel every day. It says more, Psukei de Zimra, the psalms that we say in the beginning of davening, you're supposed to say those every day. But not Hallel as in Mitzvah Yisrael and Mitzrayim. And what's the idea? Well, everybody explains that the Psukei de Zimra are just a celebration of the order of nature. What's the title psalm of Psukei de Zimra is Ashrei, Tehillah LeDavid, which is Aleph Beis, following just the Aleph Beis as the order, the building blocks of a natural world, of a cause and effect, of this step leading to that step, to the next step. That's part of creation, which Hashem made. And then there's Hallel. Then there's the deviations from creation. If a person says Hallel every day, there are different ways to say this. One way to say it is that the person doesn't see Hashem in the order of nature. That's the way many say it. You only see Hashem in the miraculous. You don't see Hashem in the ordinary. You have to see Hashem in the ordinary too. And so you, every day, you should say Tehillah LeDavid, speaking about the routine. And then you should also note the special occasions. Maharal really goes a step further. He talks about this in different places and adds different pshatim. But his thing is that there are two orders of creation, and they both coexist. There's the order of Olam Kimenhagei Noig, of the way the world is meant to go under normal circumstances. And then there's the order of the divine link to the world, where Hashem shows his presence within the world, that this world is not to be seen as a dry, disconnected, material system that's self-sustaining and just doing its own thing with Hashem out of the picture. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to be there in the system,
more open,
in the picture, mm-hmm. And yes, and that's what these miracles are there in order to say it. He writes, for example, as follows. This I'm reading in the standard edition, the second page of Hagdama Shnia. I guess it would be page Zion. It doesn't have a page number in mind, but it's page Zion, the paragraph on the bottom. Just like the world of nature has its own order, Nayagal Pitivai, right? Carrying on according to its nature, Kachish Lenisim Seder Gamkein. Miracles also have their own order. Kyanisim Ba'ilam. Miracles exist in the world. B'mashiyesh Lo'ilam Kishur V'chibur V'isachdus Im Ilam HaNivdal. Because this world has a kishur, a tie, a chibur, a connection, his achdus, a unity with the olam hanivdal, with the transcendent world. V'yesh l'zeh seder mesudar, and it's ordered. Ke'en adivuk hu rak b'seder mesudar. That connection is not helter skelter, and it's part of what is troubling people, is Oh, miracles means that you just canceled everything and went to the miraculous. What about the order of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So he says, no, that's the built-in order of the world. The built-in order of the world is to have this. That's why the miraculous has its own order. It's not constant. It's something which comes up as appropriate. When Hashem delivered man, food from the heavens to the Jewish people, don't say, wow, a deviation from the way things are supposed to be. The world was acting differently than it should have. No. That's what that Mishnah is saying. That's the idea of Tznai Hisna HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ma'isa Bereishis. This is the way the world is supposed to conduct itself. Not every day. But part of the conduct of the world is windows into the Olam HaElyon, into a higher world. Ki kashem shiroi la'olam yesnega pitiyo evanagosai. Just as the world should is supposed to follow its nature, so it is naturally appropriate for the Jewish people, as being connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that they should have supernatural things happening in the world. That's, in a certain sense, concisely stated, the Maral's picture. And I love this image which the way he understands the miracles which happened, the things which Hashem created, rather, excuse me, on Erev Shabbos Bein Hashmashos. Those points, you know, again, you can always ask, and nobody explains to me, at least I've never been able to understand so perfectly why they chose those 10 miracles of all the different ones. Right? Everybody struggles with it a little bit, but the idea is, again, that you have to see this as part of what happens with the Jewish people in the world. And I would just say that, you know, we speak about this as being, as making sense. We know that that's the purpose of man in the world, to bring a little bit of the divine. There should be God in the world, the divine soul that's in the person. That's the purpose of Shabbos in the world. That's the purpose of the miraculous in the world. But it should be familiar to us also. The last major work of the Maral that we learned in this year, I mean, we learned the Ner Mitzvah, we learned the Nesiv HaTshuva, right, the shorter ones, right? But the last major work we learned was the Tiferes, right? The Tiferes Yisrael, which is about Torah. What was the Maral's fundamental view of Torah? What was the constant thing in the first section of the Tiferes, first big section of Tiferes Yisrael, where he was laying the groundwork for the understanding of Torah? What is it? What's Torah? That's exactly what Torah is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a physical material world with all kinds of things of its own, including brain matter and knowledge and understanding and science and earthy wisdom and earthy understanding. But he needed to inject heaven into the earth. Ma'amar Har Sinai was when HaKadosh Baruch Hu came, and as the Pasuk seems to describe, as Chazal make even more picturesque, he lowered the heavens onto the earth. He blurred the boundary that exists between heaven and earth. Torah is a divine peace which HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes and puts into us, puts into our minds, puts into our beings, because this world is not supposed to function independent of Hashem. Wasn't that the fundamental idea that we learned in their mitzvah just a short time ago? The difference between the Greeks and their wisdom and the Torah, and why that's the battleground of Hanukkah? Right, the Greeks are philosophers, right? Our favorite people this morning, right? With their wisdom and tremendous wisdom and understanding of the material world. But what were they misnagate to? What did they oppose? They opposed the idea that there could be actually a divine peace, a divine component from outside of the realm of this world, of this visible world that they can see, that somehow inserts itself into it. A divine soul in a person, a divine presence of Hashkocha, a divine wisdom as expressed in the Torah. So what I'm trying to tell you is, L'cha Hashem ha-gedua v'ha-gevura v'ha-tiferes. V'ha-gevura v'ha-tiferes. Tiferes is Torah. Right? And the Maral's formulation, again, we'll learn about it still a little bit more in the Hakadosh Baruch Hu. But Tiferes is Torah. Gevura is Yetzias Mitzrayim. What's the difference between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah? Or maybe let's ask the question the other way around. What is shared between Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah? Well, I'll tell you one thing, right? We started reading Parsha Shmais this Shabbos. There's a man named Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu's ultimate legacy is not Moshe Goyaleinu. That's not what we call him. Moshe, our Redeemer. What do we call him? Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher. Our teacher. Because Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe Marashe Kilas Yaakov. The ultimate role which Moshe Rabbeinu slides into, to which he is considered utterly replaceable, is Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher. He taught us the Torah. But we haven't even begun to look at that. In yesterday's Parsha, what's Moshe Rabbeinu's job? Is to take us out of Mitzrayim. By the way, where was he given that job? He was given that job at Har Sinai. At the place which is not called in that Parsha Har Sinai, it's called Har HaElokim, the mountain of Elokim, the mountain of God, the mountain of the God who's involved in the world. That's where Hashem shows him the burning bush. That's where Aaron meets him, right? When he's coming to Mitzrayim, that's the point of departure. Now, partially, when Hashem comes to Moshe, he says, you should know that when you take the people out of Mitzrayim, you're going to be back at this mountain, and here you're going to serve me. In other words, Yetzias Mitzrayim is going to lead to Matan Torah. It so much leads to Matan Torah that we actually count down from the day that we leave Mitzrayim to the day that Hashem gives us the Torah. That the Psikta, the Rav Kahana, says that Shavuos is actually the eighth day of Pesach. In other words, there are seven biblical days of Pesach, not eight, right? And there are eight, there are Sukkot, you have 7 days, and then you have an eighth day called Shmini Atzeres. So Pesach has 7 days, and its eighth day, it's Atzeres, is Shavuos. It says, Shavuos Haimer is Chol HaMoed Pesach. That's what the Psikta says. It's the Chol HaMoed between Pesach and Shavuos, because they're linked. And just turn to the last page of the Torah. In the last page of the Torah, it says, there was nobody like Moshe Rabbeinu who Hashem spoke to and communicated to in this direct fashion, and there was nobody like Moshe Rabbeinu who performed those miracles that we have of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, Gevura and Tiferes, are two sides of the same coin. And that coin is the presence of the divine in the material. And the presence of the divine in the material is revealed through divine action and divine word. Yetzias Mitzrayim is showing Hashem's hand in the material world. Matan Torah is giving Hashem's word and connection on that level to the material world. And the same people experience both those things, one after the other. And we have a mitzvah to remember both of those things constantly. And this, again, the same person was the agent for both of those things, because you have to understand that when we speak about the presence of Hashem in the world, it's not just about a sixth sense. It's not just about being able to be spiritual and not materially but otherworldly, but in the real world. In the real world, the presence of Hashem is going to be seen too. Don't view it as an abstraction. Don't view it as a nice spiritual junket. It's real. It's as real as the splitting of the sea and the water turning to blood. That's the picture here. And so says the Maral, I'm not going to struggle. I'm not going to struggle with figuring out, does Hashem do miracles? Doesn't Hashem do miracles? How does it work? How far does it work? Yeah, that's part of the system. That's the way Hashem made the world. That's the way Hashem made the world from the beginning. Yeah, if he didn't make the world that way, it would be destroying the world to suddenly come in and say, you know, here are miracles. And it's not that Hashem can't. Hashem can destroy the world if he wants. There's no problem. The philosopher might have a hard time with Hashem changing his mind, and we would respect that. Chazal also had a hard time with Hashem changing his mind, you know, suddenly, and that kind of a thing. But it's not necessary. That's the way Hashem created the world. That it should exist, it should have a system, and that he should have a presence and an impact inside of it. Yitzias Mitzrayim is where we see that. That's what the miracles of Yitzias Mitzrayim are to demonstrate to us.
Is it not explained why it sounds like we're saying that the Tnai Hisna that Chazal said at Kriyas Yamsuf is really his springboard to say Tnai Hisna with the whole world, unless I'm misunderstanding. He's using that to say it's more broad. So the question is, why did Chazal pick that as the example?
So that is addressed. That's addressed in there, and even the Rambam speaks of that a little bit, and the part of the questions which they have on them is that it has to be specific. Why does it say this one? The Maral understands it as Masa Bereishis. Everything in Masa Bereishis, to some degree, would have been suspended. So he says, so why does it single out the earth? Why doesn't it say that when Hashem created the world, he made a condition with the earth that it would open for Kairach? So, again, there are answers that are spoken about to some of these questions, and there are answers which are not spoken about to some of these questions. But yes, that's the main thing is that it's, don't focus specifically on the Yam. The Yam is an example. That's what had to be done. There had to be Tznoim with Masa Bereishis, that it's built into creation that God's presence will be shown there.
It's built in every day, because if we don't learn Torah, it goes back to Sohav Abohu. That's a condition.
Correct. But at the same time, the impact, you don't have Yitzias Mitzrayim every day. There could be a dramatic move. There could be a dramatic change. Chazal teach us, if we take Hashem as in Torah out of the world, then the connection is dried up, and the world as a freestanding natural world without the presence of Hashem can't exist. Yom Hashishi is that you need that 6 day in order for the rest of the creation to stand. It's not that Hashem created this freestanding world and then he added into it an element to take it or leave it. Right? That Chazal that you're referring to, the many Chazal would say that you're referring to, say it's that Hashem said, and now it becomes a survival tool, an absolutely necessary survival tool for the world to exist, that presence of Hashem has to be in it.
That's right.
But visibility, Chakor Dover, that it should be obvious, is only going to come there through Yitzias.
That's where you don't have Bechira.
For whatever reason. Yeah. Okay, Nitz Hashem will continue next week.
So steep the Maral, we can't understand the philosophers. Just so far.
I am Maral, and just that's Baruch Hashem, that's why Kal Yisrael thinks. I don't know. Okay, Houston?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, as it was a problem.